Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Tired of nicks, cuts, and bumps? It's time to ditch the blade. Nair, the award-winning number one hair removal brand, gives you silky, smooth skin in as little as 3 minutes. That's smooth that lasts for days longer than shaving. Easy to use, blade-free, dermatologist tested, and made for all skin types. Plus, discover our new sensational fragrances that turn hair removal into a whole vibe. Shave less, glow more. Find Nair at all major retailers.
Iconic summer moments deserve an iconic drink. Reach for Mountain Dew, an American original. From its beginnings in the foothills of Tennessee to your biggest summer yet. The refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew is the perfect companion to your American summer adventures. Enjoy the refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew, tasting great since 48. Look for Mountain Dew in stores near you at MountainDew.com. That's MountainDew.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have reviews for Wake Up Dead Man, the new movie in the Knives Out franchise, the third one. It's on Netflix right now, but was in theaters as well. We also have reviews of Hamnet, a big-time Oscar contender, doing our top 10 movies that make you cry as well. And we will talk a little bit about the new Avengers Doomsday trailer news, kind of crazy news on that one. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 11, middle of December. We are nearing the end. Only two and a half weeks of movies left on the docket for 2025. And we have two pretty hefty releases in terms of notoriety. We have Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out mystery. Very excited to talk about this one. And Hammett, very excited to talk about this one. An Oscar contender and player for the upcoming award season. And then if you want to talk about Oscar contenders, we will have a little bit of an extended review on Ella McKay. A movie that is, I'm going to read the tweet, Kirk, that you sent me yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think this is real.
I'm 90% sure it's real. Ella McKay in Peoria, Illinois sold zero seats across 8 showings starting December 13th for 24 hours. It was a zero change of plus 0%.
Well, yeah, we'll get to talk about it later. My theater was decently crowded.
So was mine.
Yeah, mine was buzzing. It was old. Yeah. Olds galore in my theater, and they were loving it too. They were loving that movie. Well, we got to talk about it a little bit, but we will obviously, our main reviews here today are Wake Up Dead Man and Hamnet. And then in celebration of Hamnet, we'll be talking about movies that make you cry at the end for our rankings and a couple trailers and Golden Globe nominations, even though it is worth noting we as a people view the Golden Globes as a joke, as most people should. Because they just, I mean, let's call it like it is. They have a best podcast award now. So I mean, what are we doing? I mean, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah. Why didn't we campaign for that? What the fuck?
I know.
Jeff?
I can't believe.
That's why I stopped my other one. Once we weren't nominated, I was fucking out of there. Forget it.
Barstool had one podcast up as like a preliminary list.
Yeah,
part of your take did not make
it. Yeah, it's been gross
for them. Happy for them.
Very tough for us. Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out mystery. A baffling death inside a quiet church draws Benoit Blanc into a tense investigation where faith secrets and suspicion blur as a close community turns against itself. It's the third movie in the Knives Out series. Follows Knives Out, which was released in theaters, and then came after that Knives Out Glass Onion, which was released in theaters and Netflix, but mostly Netflix. This one's been released in a few more theaters, I believe. I could be wrong on that, but I think it was released a little wider than Glass Onion was. These movies do not really have any connection at all outside of Benoit Blanc, which I'm sorry if that's a spoiler, that there's no cameo of, but like you should know, that's not really a spoiler. I applaud Rian Johnson for that, because in an era where people just cannot resist having some sort of, we reviewed Five Nights at Freddy's 2 weeks ago, which was just only Easter eggs. The fact that he keeps it so clean of the previous movies, as fun as it would be to see Chris Evans show up in a jail scene, right? Like whatever, like it's nice that he just kind of makes a new fresh thing. It's just Benoit Blanc. 2 hours and 24 minutes long. Rian Johnson directing, as I mentioned. I believe he has another project after this, so he will not be doing Knives Out 4 next. Knives Out 4 will come after the next project. Loaded cast: Daniel Craig, Josh O'Connor, Glenn Close, Josh Brolin. I should have said Josh O'Connor's name first. He's really the lead guy in this. Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis, Jeremy Renner, Kerry Washington, Andrew Scott, Kaylee Spaney, and Thomas Hayden Church. $2.5 million at the box office, I believe, is what it made. Again, very small release on Netflix already. 92-94% split on Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody loves it. 7.6 on IMDb. Metacritic 81. Letterboxd 4.0. Kirk, what did you think? I think we all saw this in theaters, actually.
Yeah, I did anyway, yeah.
Yeah, long before Netflix. So, Kirk, what did you think about Knives Out, the third Knives Out movie?
My favorite one is still the first one. I think this is the best of the three. I think it's a really, really good movie. It's just a good time. The audience I was with was very into it. I guess we'll avoid spoilers best we can for now. I liked that they kept us away from Craig for a while, kind of started telling that story first, took their time. Josh O'Connor was great in it. He's a terrific actor. I was not stunned by the ending, but it didn't really matter. I thought they handled that well. I thought all the performances were good across the board. I was into it the whole time. I did not feel like it ran 2 hours and 24 minutes at all. It felt like an hour 50 to me. You could trim stuff out. You always can. But it's like an 86 for me. I maybe an 88. I just thought it's kind of what movie's supposed to be. I like that this guy has made this franchise. I didn't love the second one, but has made this franchise, has made three really just good movies. I mean, this movie on its own is just a good movie. Like, the Knives Out of it all, notwithstanding, I just thought it was a really, really good time at the movie theater, and there's, not enough of that.
I will note that it is fascinating, if you like these movies at least, that he's found a way to make mystery movies where the twist and reveal, yes, they matter, but they kind of, like, it kind of doesn't. Like, it does, but it doesn't, where it's like, that's not the point, which I think is a nice way that he's kind of, like, found a way to, like, reinvent the wheel a bit to a franchise, to a genre which really shouldn't have any reinventing. Gooch, yeah. I think you saw it first. Yeah, I know ahead, you Gooch. Liked it as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think some people who... I think it's a very disingenuous way to come at this movie and be like, oh, I figured it out. Like, that's not the point of this. I'm happy you figured it out. It's pretty telegraphed through all three of these what's going to happen. I do think this twist is a lot better than the last one in Glass Onion with the twin reveal. Didn't really care for that. I didn't care for a lot of that movie once I revisited it. But it was COVID, and, you forgive a lot of... We were forgiving a lot of things at that point. Really like this. I do think the supporting cast is probably the weakest yet, but it doesn't matter because Josh O'Connor is just simply fantastic in this movie. It is the first time it has been someone other than Benoit Blanc's movie, and Josh O'Connor is because of that. I mean, he is fantastic. He's turning in like this Jimmy Stewart, Tom Hanks type, like very genuine performance, very endearing and emotional. He runs really a gamut of emotions throughout it. I came away just so impressed. And Rian Johnson as well. He's just such a great writer. So many movies come at religion, and usually from the negative side. I mean, that's just the nature of Hollywood. They do not like it for the most part. And this one does have criticisms of religion, but Rian Johnson found a way to make it pro-Catholicism, but really just pro-giving yourself up to something bigger. And the way he attacks it is just, it's very beautiful. I was pretty moved during several scenes in this. So I landed an 80.
Yeah, he makes one choice specifically, obviously, too, that's kind of out there already. That's probably the best scene in the movie. Maybe the best scene of any of the three movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where he takes a phone call in the middle. And it's to the direction you don't expect in these movies. And it was, I thought, the smart one.
Ken Jack.
Yeah, I unfortunately did not watch this in a theater. Coming back, I watched this on my phone coming back from Singapore. It was miserable there, flight, yeah. But miserable
That'd
flight.
That'd be a tough turn in the honeymoon, right? Like, hey, I know we have some good things planned.
Knives Out 3.
At least I got a Rian Johnson, and I watched the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy and the entire Star Wars original trilogy, too. So it was a great back-to-back-to-back-to-back. I think that I would agree with you guys. Josh O'Connor is fantastic. I think he's awesome. Really interesting character that I think he gets a lot of levels on. And I agree with you guys, like the way that he tackles Rian Johnson religion in here, it has a lot more nuance than I thought maybe he was capable of. Cause he's, especially after Glass Onion, it felt like he was very kind of knelt into this, like, I gotta own the social commentary. I gotta, like, do the libtard thing, which they do a little bit in this. I gotta do like the left wing. I gotta hit these sides. And it felt like he wasn't really doing that much anymore. And yeah, I think he hit that there and it was great. At the same time, I'm watching these movies. I feel more for Benoit Blanc, and there's not really Benoit Blanc in this. And like, I like what Josh O'Connor was doing. It's just not necessarily what I'm watching Knives Out for. And I really want to get that more hamming it up Blanc performance. And I feel like we missed that. I feel like we also missed, like you were saying, I definitely agree, weakest supporting cast. None of them are really given a chance to do much. When you have dudes like, you know, Scott, Spaney, like all these other like up and coming or already established actors, like I really expect them to get the chance to shine and do something and like really contribute. And they really didn't. And their detriment came to the, I guess it was for positive for O'Connor because he really shines. He's that good. I would say I like the movie. I'm at like a 73 out of 100. I'm a little bit below you guys. I like the setting. I like the way that that church was beautiful, by the way. I don't know if that was in a real world they built that set. That was gorgeous.
There's a church in England, or I think that's what they said. Yeah.
Yeah, just like that white, then red middle, then like the pew. Like it was gorgeous. I think the twist, like you guys are saying, this is very much, this isn't like watching like an M. Night movie where it's like, okay, where's the twist? Where's the twist? Where's the twist? It's like you're more there for the journey than the destination. When I think that is the fun part about this is watching that slowly unravel. Like even if you kind of guess, hey, this person's probably behind this, you kind of want to see how it rolls out. And I think that the slow unraveling was really well done. It was cool. I liked most. I would say even if they weren't given enough of a chance to shine, I liked most of the performances in it. I think I liked this about like a little bit more than Glass Onion, but not by a huge amount. And I think that's just because I really wanted to get. I like Blanc, Benoit Blanc as a character a lot, and I think that's a really cool performance from Craig. And I feel like he just isn't really that present in this movie, and that was kind of a bummer for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of close to where Kirk and Gooch are. I gave this an 88. I quite love this. One, great to see. Again, just like I commended him for at least trying something a little different with Glass Onion. It didn't work exactly well for me. I actually liked it more the second time I saw it, but it's definitely like a fairly large step down from these two. And this one is a step down from the first. The first is going to be always pretty impossible to reach those levels again. But man, I thoroughly just enjoyed just a change of tone, a change of pace here. And I thought the characters that mattered worked really well. I thought Josh O'Connor was great. I think Benoit Blanc, I would agree, maybe like a little more from him would be nice, but like that's like kind of, for me, it's like splitting hairs at that point, because I do think when he's in there, he hams it up and he is able to kind of nail his moments. But I just like, there's just a flow and pace with these movies that is fucking perfect. Like, I don't care if it's 2 hours, 24 minutes. I don't care if it's 2 hours. Like, he has a way with this type of story and the Benoit Blancness of whatever he's trying to do, Rian Johnson does, where he just writes something that just kind of works effortlessly, which I feel like in the mystery genre can be very much the difficult thing to pull off, where it's like, oh, God, we're looking at this thing next, and we're moving to this part next. And it feels like a kind of like a trudge to get to the end, where again, like these movies just flow so on. And this one was pretty great work by him. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Wake Up Dead Man. We'll get more into it in spoilers as well, because there's some pretty key parts and moments that I thought were like, oh, that's, Kirk kind of alluded to, that's surprising and nice. Like, that's a different type of thing he's trying, and it's kind of crazy. It works in this type of like, I guess, dramedy mystery. But B also gives it a kind of fresh feel. Clemmer, I know you are very different on the end of the spectrum as all of us.
Hates movies.
Not just with this movie, but also with this franchise.
Hates movies and hates religion, too.
That's not true. It's not true.
No, you're a man of – you did all religions, didn't you? You growing up?
I did. Yeah, my dad would – every year we'd pick a different,
okay, just spare us the bit. Just give the review. I don't want to hear this bullshit story.
It's what happened.
Don't want to hear this lie. Go ahead.
It's a weird lie to tell, Kirk.
I agree. It's kind of scary, honestly.
I don't know about going to Presbyterian churches for a year. Is quite a lie.
When you hear someone was the Benny Gesserit from Dune.
he didn't last that long, Jeff. Don't worry. Wake Up Dead Man. I don't think I'm that much on the side of you guys differently than what you said. I'm about 75 for this. I like, my favorite part of this was not the knives out of it all, as Kirk was saying. I'm kind of anti-Kenjack on that end, where like I don't know if I need a lot more Benoit Blanc, but I really love Josh O'Connor's performance. I thought it was fantastic. It's worth the price of admission alone. Like he's fantastic in this. He's so good. And he has a kindness that you don't see, kind of like what Gucci's saying with religion. Like, you just don't see that shown on film a lot. Like, usually it's kind of the stereotypical, like, religion bad. And in this case, you saw, like, maybe, like, kind of the good side and kind of why people are drawn to religion. And it's that caring, it's that kindness. The first half hour where you don't see Benoit Blanc, it's not really Knives Out at all. It's just an interesting story. And then I thought Josh Brolin was really good. And kind of that back and forth was fantastic. That's the best part of the movie for me. The ending is convoluted. To me, it's kind of a mess. It's just constantly like trying to like one up on who it possibly could be. And that just kind of makes me roll my eyes. But I like this movie. I give this a 75. I like this a lot better than Glass Onion, which I didn't like. I think this was, and all because of Josh O'Connor and the Knives Out, the everything but the Knives Out part, I really enjoyed.
All right, we can get into the spoilers. See, I expected a different review because I feel like your Letterboxd review, what I read, was significantly more negative than this.
I don't think it was. I think I gave it 3 stars on Letterboxd, which for me is that's
okay. I kind of sound like you liked it. I'm a little taken aback right now.
I mean, I also did the review on Twitter, and that was the same. I think I have it ranked fairly fine.
The religion aspect is a huge part of this, and there is. I don't know if there's an assumption. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like for the most part, it's like you either get with religion in movies, especially something that has like a comedic twist, you get something that's a little more leaned into like religion, rah, rah, or like a way to mock it. And this felt like a very like, I don't know what the best way to put it is, but there's a phone call he takes in the middle of this movie, which kind of stops his attention to the mystery of it all. Kind of dead in its tracks, right, Kirk? That's what kind of you're leading to.
Yeah, Bridget Everett, right?
There's a way which they wrote it, which was like almost impressive. You don't see religion handled that in that way where it's like kind of split down the middle in a way for no matter how religious you are or are not, like it's kind of a I'm having trouble finding the words.
But at the same time, they certainly are aware of the zealot aspect of religion, clearly. I mean, we see a lot of that as well at the same time. So, you know, with the Glenn Close character and all that stuff. But that I think that's a really good scene. And I think Gooch made it in Ken Jack as well. I think is right, though, is if you're going to knock anything, I do think, like, some of these supporting characters got just like, I think Jeremy Renner was there for like 2 days. Like, he had nothing to do. It was like 50 minutes where I was like, where's Jeremy? Not that I'm dying to see him or anything, but it was just strange that he wasn't. I felt he was really underwritten, and Kerry Washington, I thought, was very sort of on the nose.
Kaylee Spaney, like one of the biggest and most like up-and-coming huge actresses in the world right now, and she just has like 3 lines, just a one-dimensional nothing character. And
it's
like
kind of really is a two-hander for like an hour, really, with O'Connor and Craig. I mean, they're just kind of off to the races together.
But I do think I think that was kind of where there's like a softness to the approach of like religion that I was kind of like, again, I almost expected it to be added in as, and I'm not like a very religious person, added in as more of like a mocking way, right? Like a more comedic, like almost not slapstick, but like that kind of way. And there's just, there's a tone he takes it, which is like, oh, like it kind of gives you, because I know some people had to complain to The Last One, right? Where it kind of gets a little silly and like, it's very like influencer heavy and, you know, like Hollywood big names and like they're kind of flashy and goofy. Where I thought you might see that just with like the religion angle of it here. And they didn't take that. I think that's kind of where he, I think, hit the biggest home run, is that it just has such a different vibe than either of them. And it does feel fresh. I don't know if that's how you felt about that as well, Gooch.
Yeah, no. And it's, I don't want to say disappointing, but I do wish he would bring that same nuance that he brought to his take on religion, that he completely loses that when he starts getting into the political spectrum. And that's kind of been a hanging point for him. It works really well in Knives Out when you have Jamie Lee Curtis doing it, and you have, it's a much more interesting, they had more interesting things to do, I'd say, in the first one. But these last two, these supporting characters become caricatures that feel like they were written by SNL writing rooms
SNL, at points. Yep.
Yes, it's very low-hanging fruit for a writer who I think is just way more talented than that. The religion stuff is very impressive, but it does, next time around, Ryan, I need you to really think about how you're writing these conservative characters. There's room for criticism, obviously, and he's a very smart guy, but I need to see that on screen. I don't need you to throw out Andrew Scott and like Jeremy Renner and being like, Oh, why, yeah, just give a little bit more nuance.
Oh, I don't think Brolin was underwritten, though.
No. Yeah. But the Andrew Scott, Jeremy Renner, Kerry Washington's son, those are all just one-note characters.
That's like Twitter characters, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's like, you know, Krasenstein, or reverse Krasenstein guys. But
very happy. There was a moment where I was like, where there was like this fierce anger from Brolin that it was very like understated initially. And I was like, I'm watching fucking Thanos. I want to see him erupt. And when he does erupt, he's fucking incredible. Like when he gets up there and he starts preaching and he's screaming and yelling, like that was a great casting.
That was a good Brolin. I didn't love the Running Man, but he's fun in it. And Sinners, obviously, mm-hmm. he's a good kind of like almost like Ed Harris in like 1998 kind of year. He's just bouncing around doing good. I think he's figured out at this point of his career, he's gonna have fun doing supporting roles, and that
is a fantastic comp.
He just elevates it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually very curious if he's doing another movie between this and Knives Out 4. I guess it might be towards the end. I would be very curious if the next Knives Out is out of the Trump era, is the politicalness toned down? I would be very curious on that. Which I'm sure that's not even really a question about Knives Out. That's probably a question for like most movies. But I would be curious come that point if you do see maybe less of it. Even if it's not the fourth, but if it is the fifth. Because I would agree, because some of the political commentary stuff, though I do think it was significantly toned down from the last one. It was a little like it was way easier to digest than the last one.
Clemmer, what did you think was convoluted about the... I know it was a lot going on, but what was convoluted about the?
Are we getting to the spoilers now, or I don't want to?
No, we're full.
Yeah,
we're
spoiling.
Yeah, we have acid baths. We have we have people who look like other people who maybe you see in the right light. Like it's
you're saying like the tomb stuff.
Oh, I mean, all of it, the tomb stuff, the acid bath, like just on its own. And I know you guys seem to really appreciate the series, and maybe you're more forgiving. That's ridiculous. Like if you just wrote down what happened at the end of that movie, that's stupid. But it does look great, and you did get those great performances up top, and you guys do seem to have affinity for the series. So because of that, I think you are more forgiving than if this was just a murder mystery.
On its own.
A one-off on its own. You'd be like, this is stupid. Like, the stuff that's happening in this movie is flat out stupid.
I don't know. I don't know if I feel with that on this one.
You think it's okay that she saw someone who looked like Josh Brolin looks like Thomas Hayden Church enough to make it believe that people believe someone rose from the dead, and then they end up having Glenn Close throw people into an acid bath? That's all okay?
Yeah. By her trauma as a kid, though, like it kind of does land.
I didn't mind that stuff.
That's why she's the way.
Flashbacks look amazing, by the way. The whole movie looks amazing. The flashbacks look fucking incredible, by the way. They did such a good job with that.
You know what I mean, Clemmer?
I understand that's why she is what she is. I have a hard time believing that 80-year-old Glenn Close is throwing people into an acid bath. I just
she
don't
threw him down the stairs. It was kind of funny.
Like, yeah, also like stupid. Like that's like dumb. Like
I'm with you because I tend to overthink these things too. Because I was like, if Thomas Hayden Church one day just like in this life they're in just cut his hair, like felt like getting a haircut, would she be like, oh fuck? Like I hope he cuts his hair too. But you can't get it is Knives Out. Like you do have to kind of buy into it to some extent.
And that's where I kind of just don't. I don't love the series enough to buy into that. But the other parts of it, though, were so good. And that's what made me kind of frustrated, although also excited for Rian Johnson's next project, because the non-Knives Out parts were so good. So, like, all right, let's kind of see you do something
break
else.
Is, I think Break Frame, I think, will be good, yeah.
I kind of view it almost like, and they mentioned this in the movie too, like they're almost like the bad guys in these movies are Scooby-Doo villains, right? Like they get caught and they lose every single time. Like they're not that smart. Like that's kind of the idea, at least to me.
Because I mean, there is an inherent over the topness to Benoit Blanc. I mean, great scene when he plays the piano to get their attention. That's fine. So I got a great laugh. Like there is like, I mean, it isn't right. Like there is other elements to which are pretty. Even just like Glenn Close, like showing up and scaring people because she's standing behind. Like there is like a little bit of that where it kind of. It's not like it's just the reveal and just the mystery part element that's like kind of like. I guess it's very big and grand, but I do think it fits with everything else though. Like it doesn't feel out of place for the rest of the movie.
The Josh O'Connor part's nothing like that. That's a real honest to God person you would meet.
Yeah, that's part of the clash.
So
thing
like that's too. Not true.
I think that's kind of what makes it so unique. Like, I think that like his levity with that phone call is like I think it makes it. I don't know. I think it makes it a very unique blend of that genre.
That's kind of how he set up Klemmer, like this sort of normal guy with a temper or whatever.
You're right.
Walks into this crazy world like that. He sort of has to be normal. Because if he's crazy too, then everyone's fucking crazy.
I agree, and Mila Kunis also wasn't crazy.
Yeah, she's not really in it. Just the church. I mean, that was not much going on there. Yeah.
No, but just the church part was crazy, right? Everything else wasn't.
I mean, he didn't kill a guy too. That is like a thing they talk about. He didn't murder somebody in a boxing ring, so it's like it is like.
Right.
How much did it bother you, Klemmer, that they that Thomas Hayden Church was watching Cubs Diamondbacks in rural New York? No explanation at all.
No, it didn't. Bother
he had to record it.
He has extra innings. He's got that extra innings package.
He's extra innings with the fucking bunny ears in his garage. Yeah.
Hey, anything baseball is probably going to be a win for me, so I was okay with that. But don't get me wrong. I think I like this movie even more than Kenjack. I did not dislike this movie at all. There were a lot of good parts, but I am anxious for Rian Johnson to take a break.
I think it's not even that I disliked it. I think it's just I feel anxious. Like there's two movies here. There's the Knives Out movie and there's a Josh O'Connor movie. And like the other movies are clearly like even Glass Onion, like that's Knives Out. Like didn't work, but it was definitely Knives Out. And this one, I feel like there's this really authentic, interesting Josh O'Connor movie. And then there's like the hamming up Benoit Blanc Knives Out movie. And they clash. And sometimes it melds really well and like gives you like that little break, like you guys were saying. And sometimes I just feel like I'm watching kind of two different things. So that part of it, I didn't totally love. Still better than Glass Onion though. Again, that very clear.
Yeah, so even the people here who didn't maybe love it still enjoyed it and had an okay enough time with it. I mean, look, first of all, it's on Netflix. If for some reason it's still in a theater, which I don't think it is, go see it. Looks great. Going with the crowd is awesome. Crowd loves it. Has a good time. But it is on Netflix if you do want an easy way to watch it.
Yeah, it's still playing in some theaters. Kind of good movies for I saw Rian Johnson tweet that out, that it's still playing in some theaters.
So. It is, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Really wish he didn't make that deal with Netflix, but whatever.
Well, he's also gonna kind of shut up. Like you made the deal.
Yeah,
like, you got a shitload of money.
It's give and take. Like you make the deal. The deal probably allows him to make as many of these as he wants. But it's like
For sure.
You make the deal with the devil. It's kind of how it works. So that's Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery. Next up is Hamnet, very different movie. All right, we're almost to the end of our 12 days of game time. That is right. Game time. They're giving away crazy prizes every day with a $5,000 grand prize at the end. If you still have not entered, go to 12daysofgametime.com. It is free and only takes seconds. This season, Game Time is celebrating the moments that made people fans, and they have been enabling those moments for 12 years now. I've used Game Time for so many things, and another one of my favorite moments, used Game Time a couple years ago, take my mom to go to the Final Four at UConn, knocked off Alabama, and they beat Purdue in the national championship. I made that trip out there. I bought those tickets when I landed. I was on the tarmac in Phoenix, bought those tickets last minute. Great. Was right behind the benches. Was on TV the whole game. It was fucking awesome. Incredible experience that I'd only get with Game Time, because everything with Game Time is so easy, so last second, and you get these fantastic deals with the fees up front, simple, easy. Going to do the same thing for the college football playoff coming up, Texas A&M, Miami, going to my buddies who are A&M fans. No better way to get a ticket for anything, whether it be a concert, a game, etc., than Game Time. These are the types of moments that Game Time is celebrating. Go to 12daysofgametime.com, the number 12daysofgametime.com today for a chance to experience one of these moments. William Shakespeare and his wife, Agnes, is how you pronounce it, I believe, changed from...
Yeah.
The change is very interesting on this, of what her name is supposed to be. It's supposed to be Anne Hathaway. And I didn't read into why or if that was changed because of that, but that is a chuckle. William Shakespeare and his wife celebrate the birth of their son, Hamnet. However, when tragedy strikes and Hamnet dies at a young age, it inspires Shakespeare to write his timeless masterpiece, you guessed it, Hamlet. 2 hours and 6 minutes long. Chloe Zhao directing, first movie since Eternals, which was panned. Nomadland, before that, she won a plethora of Oscars for that. The Rider, before that. Jesse Buckley is in the co-lead role with Paul Mescal. She is the heavy odds on favorite, which we'll talk to later on in this review, to win Best Actress at the Oscars. Paul Mescal probably not going to win, but will likely get a nomination. Emily Watson and Joe Alwyn of Taylor Swift's boyfriend fame. Movie made $5 million 5.9 million so far at the box office, 87% from critics, 92% from audiences, 8.1 IMDb, 66 Metacritic, 4.2 on Letterboxd. We are going to be very split on this one, I think. Ken Jack, what did you and Gooch saw it for, you and Gooch saw it a long time ago at a press screening. What did you think? What do you give it?
I think I probably like this more than most of the people here based off of the initial reactions, I think. So I ended up giving it like a 90 out of 100 for me. And I know a lot of people aren't going to like that at all.
I think people are very, I think the people who are on the opposite of the spectrum are not going to be the consensus on this.
For sure.
I know you guys are going to dig it, but I'll rationalize my thinking on this. So, I mean, right off the bat, like the acting across the board is all great, just straight up. But Buckley is, I've had Oscar stock in her for a while, and that's cashing in this cycle for sure. She's so good. This is absolutely insane. Difficult performance, and I think she hits every note of it that you could possibly get. And also, in addition to him, like Mescal is good. I think an issue with Mescal I always have is like he struggles to act with his eyes, and this is like a drama where like you really kind of need, like his eyes are always the exact same no matter what is happening in his life, and that always bothers me, and it really bothered me in this too. But he's very solid as far as like there's a lot of very like intermediate and long takes where like he needs to know a lot of very heavy dialogue, and he nails all of it. And also Jacoby Jupe. No Jupe's younger brother, No Jupe's also in this, obviously. That kid is like one of the best child acting performances I think I've seen.
He's a good actor.
In a long time, that kid. He's like, what, like 5 years old? He's unbelievable. I think it looked beautiful, gorgeous. I mean, all Chloe Zhao's movies, I would say, for the most part, look great, even Eternals. The score from Max Richter, I think this is one of the year's best. And they had that total cheat code song at the end, which is
gross.
That was the one moment where I was like, oh, you could have held off on that one. But if you've seen a lot of different movies, it's he uses it a lot. And I kind of like how this movie existed really in the periphery of Shakespeare. Like it's foundationally a kind of like story, like how different people process an event like that differently. Like some people throw themselves into work. Some people like they just wallow in it and they can't escape it and they can't go anywhere. They just need to sit in it. And it just kind of just happens in that world of Shakespeare. And I enjoyed that. I like visually how they portrayed death and crossing over. I thought that was very kind of unique way of looking at it. The cry porn and Oscar bait accusations make sense. And my early counter, before you guys will even get to it, I'm sure. My question will be is like, I don't know how you make an adaptation of this book without it being labeled that. Like I can't figure out a way. Like, there's no way to make a movie that is in this Shakespearean whatever world and not get accused of that unless you're going like full Baz Luhrmann, nasty, gross, disgusting mode. Like, that's the only way you don't get accused of Oscar baiting or cry porn. So that's my only thing where like I don't view it necessarily as that because I don't know a way you can make it without it being looking at it that way. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, again, really, really strongly acted across the board. That was the real highlight. And definitely cried during it, and it was a brutal watch, but not one I think I'll ever rewatch. But very, very good movie. Enjoyed it quite a bit.
I will say, people may view this term differently. I also don't think, I'm going to contradict myself in about 10 minutes, but I also don't think Oscar bait means bad either, though. I like so you can Oscar sure. bait can also be good. Like I like things that I'm like, yeah, that is fucking Oscar bait, but I do love that shit.
I mean, Oppenheimer is Oscar bait in its own way.
Yeah,
it's a huge subject, huge director. Like it's great,
that's so different than what we think.
I know, but to the point, like you can make an Oscar bait movie and have it be. Great.
Period pieces exist in their own like way of people looking at it. You know what I mean? Like really, whenever a movie's period piece, people are like, oh, well, that's obviously Oscar bait. It could be anything. It could be like The Favorite or not.
Schindler's List is Oscar bait. Happens to be a great film. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are, you know, I mean, Steven Spielberg makes a movie about the Holocaust, you know, 3 hours in black and white. It's Oscar bait, but it's also a great film.
Mm-hmm. Gooch, you're up next. You saw it with Ken Jack.
Yeah, saw it with Ken Jack, and then saw it once again this week. Lowered my score, but only
marginally. This guy's a regular Zhao head. Look at this guy.
Yeah. Watched The Writer yesterday too. I'm all great in on movie. Chloe Zhao, our best, one of our best working directors, right, Kirk?
Oh god, get the fuck out of here.
The Writer's a good movie. The Writer's good.
The Writer is pretty good. And then after that, you can quickly before Gooch goes, Something to forget. I count the Nomadland Oscars like I count the Dustin Johnson 2020 Masters.
Yeah, it's like the Lakers. Championship.
Doesn't happen. Yeah, it did never happen. Never happened. Sorry,
I'm with you on that one. And I would say outside of her endeavor into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Nomadland is her worst movie. But this is a return to form for her. I think back to where she was with The Writer. I really love the way this movie is shot, which I don't want that to get lost here. Shot by Laszlo. Damn, that's going to bother me. 1 second.
Dude, the Polish, the Eastern European cinematographers have really been taken over.
Yeah, shot by Lucas. Lucas Zhao, who did Zone of Interest last year. And I can feel that in this movie. It's shot like it's very voyeuristic and still very natural, which is something Zhao's kept across all of her movies. And because of that, I felt I was able to get immediately immersed into this movie, especially through that first hour and the love story that they put in front of us. And it lets those performances, especially because it's a period piece and they're speaking in, you know, old English, you really have to have those performances lead the way and suck the audience in. And for me, I was brought in. I can see how if you recognize that it's trying to manipulate you and create a heavy emotional reaction, that maybe you get turned off by that and pull away. For me, I was just sucked in harder and crushed even harder at the end. We'll talk about that more. Kinjack, I didn't even notice the Max Richter song at the very end. That's how like into it I was in that final third act. I was did not clock to me at all until we were leaving and you brought that up. Second time around, this is where the points come off, is I do notice that. I notice that they're using some cheap stuff that I don't appreciate, which would be that score. Notice that the second time around. There's some very referential lines to Shakespeare that I think we could have done without. I think this movie is really good at not, like Kendrick said, staying away from the Shakespeare stuff for the most part. At points, you almost forget it's even about Shakespeare in that time period. But when they do remind you, it's very clunky. Like, I'm looking for William Shakespeare's apartment. I'm like, okay, okay. But all in all, I loved this movie. I really did. I was swept away. I was just absolutely crushed both times. And Jesse Buckley should be running away with this thing for several scenes in this movie, not just that ending scene. She's just great, transcendent throughout. 80 out of 100, by the way, or 85 out of 100, sorry.
Kirk up next. This is where the tide will turn. I will say, though, before your view, I don't know if you agree on this, though, and I feel like you might. I also get why people, like, I will say, like, I do get why people like this. Like, this is not, I'm not like, what the fuck? No, it just doesn't work for me. I think
we're firmly in the minority. Like, there was a woman, two theater stories from the Gooch's point when Joe Alwyn says, we're looking for William Shakespeare. A woman in my row was like, yes. She was all excited. She's like, it is William Shakespeare. and then there was a woman at the end of my row who was, I don't think I've ever seen somebody sob so heavily ever. But she had to be like removed from like her boyfriend to carry her out of the theater. So definitely a minority. This felt false for me from moment one. The wooing of the two, the witch stuff, the fucking tree, the kid who I thought was a fucking brat. Like, I just did not care. Everything felt forced. Everything. Jesse Buckley's a good actress. Didn't think she was very good in it. I think it's one of the two films this week where I feel like the lead actress is battling a concussion at certain points because she, like, that last scene, she has her mouth open the whole time. Like, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Why is she, and William Shakespeare, like, all of a sudden, he's just, like, super in the, you feel like he doesn't give a shit the whole time. Then in the end, he's like, oh, yeah, I wrote this friggin' thing. You're like, what? What is going on? I just felt like I was getting, like, you could cry. A kid dies, you're going to cry. I never got into this from moment one. I felt like I was being manipulated, which is completely fine. I think there's a chance it's going to win Best Picture because I think most people reacted like Gooch and Kenjack, and this happens. I mean, these movies win Best Picture sometimes. I was sort of confused a lot of the time during it. I did not need to see her give birth again. I feel like I saw that 16 times. And it just, I didn't love Mescaline, though I think is a good actor. Jesse Buck is a really good actress. I think she's gonna win two Oscars in the next 10 years. I don't think it'll be for this one. The director, I don't know. Like, this is now two, three for me, kind of mediocre ones in a row. Just did nothing for me. I just felt like I'm sitting there thinking, why, about 45 minutes in, they're in that kitchen again. I'm like, why do I care about these fucking people at all? So for me, 38.
Damn.
Holy shit. Like, I mean, I didn't like it. Like, I'm not gonna give it a fake number because it's gonna get Oscar nominations. I just didn't like it. I never, like, I don't even think I thought about Jesse, but I'm like, I guess she's good in that lap, but she puts her, I don't know. At some point during that last scene, I want someone to tell, like, shut the fuck up. Like, there's a play going on here. Like, why are
they
you yelling?
Trying to.
Yeah. I go, well, why are they, why is she talking? Like, what is going on? I don't know. Maybe I'm cynical. I like a good weeper, but oh man, I did not feel this movie at all.
Clemmer, where did you land on it?
So I don't like Shakespeare. Like, I don't like the language confuses me. Maybe I'm just stupid. Like, it all just, it, I have a really hard time connecting to anything Shakespeare, including this. I agree mostly with the Curse criticism. The only difference, I thought Jesse Buckley was really good in this, especially in those first two acts. I thought she was fantastic. The second act, I didn't hate. I kind of enjoyed that one the most. The third act lost me with all of the Shakespeare. Like, I felt like kind of the Leo meme where you're like, oh, I recognize that, or I recognize, and like, it was just so weird. And in the first act, the love story, I just didn't buy. It just seemed, just seemed odd to me. It almost like something, a piece was missing. I thought this movie was pretty ugly too. Like, I know you guys say it's shot off. I thought it was drab as fuck. Like, I just thought it was like a bland like palette. Like, I just didn't like anything. I didn't enjoy that at all. I'm at like a 48 for this. And partly because mostly because of Jesse Buckley. Paul Mescal was okay, but you guys made a good point about his eyes. I did feel like there was something missing. Maybe that was it.
Good swimmer.
Great.
Competitive swimmer, yeah. Who knew?
I don't know. I could not connect to this movie at all. I think a lot of it is just because of the language, and I just don't do Shakespeare well. This is no exception.
Yeah, that's where I am. I mean, I'm not as low as you guys, but I don't love it at all, and I'm nowhere near where I think most people are who seem to like it. Because I think if you don't have this towards the top of the year, you're pretty much in the minority at this point, because that's where most people do have it. I'll make a pretty big note off the top. If you've read any of my reviews or listened to our old podcast, you know I hate this time period. I hate this time period. It makes my skin crawl. I hate it. It bores the shit out of me. I think there's some good here. I think Chloe Zhao is very good at writing chemistry between characters. I think she also overwrites and gets like too fucking sappy. We can bring up the atomic bomb scene from Eternals. If you want to bring up a scene. I think there's some moments here which are very good. Like, I do think some of the chemistry between them is great, and a lot of it is her writing and the performances. But I also think she also has, as good as that is for her, I think sometimes she overdoes it. I think she does it in way too many spots in this, and it just feels too artificial. And if you don't, I think it's as simple as that. If you don't connect emotionally, like, I just think this movie is at best like well made in spots, some decent performances, but that's kind of it. And that's kind of where I land.
To be or not to be seen is just,
that's the worst on rewatch. That was the thing that bothered me the most. That was like, it almost doesn't even. It doesn't make sense, and like the way they insert that scene so strangely into like the movie, it completely stops everything, and then you're just looking at Paul Mescal standing over doing his soliloquy. I really did not like that part on rewatch. I was like, whoa.
And like, I'm not like with you, Clemmer. Like, I'm not a huge like Shakespeare. I don't know what the right word is, but like, I'm not like a hater of Shakespeare. Like, there's some stuff I like, but you could also argue that, you know, I like Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann movie. So maybe, you know, maybe I'm not the intended Shakespeare target audience. But I also like the Tragedy of Macbeth a lot. So, you know, I don't mind when it is like thick Shakespeare. But it just doesn't emotionally doesn't work for me. And I think that's like a non-starter with this. If you don't connect emotionally with this, like, what is it? Yeah, I didn't particularly care for this, but I also recognize why people like it, and I also recognize the fact that this is going to have real contention at the Oscars. I think One Battle has kind of fortified a wall of sorts. It seems that I don't think anyone except for Sinners and maybe the slightest bit Marty Supreme could knock down. But I do think it's a real contender, and I think it's very clearly going to win Best Actress. Like, she's her odds, she's just running away with it at this point.
Kurt,
but it's just not for me. It just doesn't work.
I don't think she's going to win. I don't. It's my gut feeling. I could be completely wrong. The odds are it's a long way to go. We're still in December.
It is a very long way to go. Very true.
Would you have somebody else in mind?
Rose Byrne, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
She was so good, though. Yeah. Rose Byrne was amazing.
But this is a very, I mean, like, I'm probably going to be wrong. This is a very Oscar performance.
I still think Renee Renzve could have a chance with sentimental value. If she picks up enough stuff, especially internationally, I do think, like, she is going to win an Oscar eventually. And if, like, she kind of just slowly, like, this, you know, it reminds me of, like, a little Olivia Colman-ish, right? Where it's like, oh, here's that, you know, non-American performance, that international movie, something different. And she kind of quietly, I could definitely see that. Not that Hamnet's fucking thick American movie, but, you know, you get what I'm saying, where it's like, it's a different type of movie. So, yeah, I could.
No,
what's your score for this movie, Jeff?
Me, 70.
Okay.
I don't despise it like you do.
I don't say despise it.
I walked into that theater being like, this might take the fucking cake for me this year. I mean, there's enough of it that I liked, like, but it's so below what my expectations were. It was like, I was shocked.
I want to present like because you guys didn't like the third act. And I think that the way I viewed the third act was like, this is a woman that was like literally driven insane with guilt. And that's why I think she's acting so spacey. And so, like, you guys are saying, like, why is she acting so, like, a fucking nut job? Like, I think, like, she, like, they presented, right? Like, she, we're in spoilers, right, by now, I think?
Yeah.
She said, like, I gave birth to this other kid, and that's, if I gave birth to another kid, then one of them's going to die. So she's, like, kind of driven insane, both by just the kid dying and by, like, the guilt of her thinking that it was her own fault, and then also her partner just being a no-show the entire time. So I feel like literally the person being driven insane leading into that one last moment, which is
why I actually if you a big reason why this is not like a failing grade for me is I actually do like the ending. I actually like the way this movie wraps. I think it's well done in that sense, and it saves it big time for me, because where I was going into that ending was not really where I ended up finishing. But I do think for me that's what kind of saves it, albeit I absolutely was not in a fucking puddle like some people were. But I can also recognize that it was a well executed ending.
When they all put their arms out. And they all had the power of art to unite us and to immortalize his son.
You're now making me rethink the ending solely because how annoying she was at that. How annoying she would be around her in a movie or a show.
Oh my God. I would have been like, listen, sorry, kids die all the time back then. Like, we, you know, let's suck it up here. But Kendrick, I get your point, but like, to me, it just didn't, the first two acts just weren't good enough for that to land.
Gotcha.
Like, if I thought the first, like, I get where you're coming from. If I really liked the first two acts, I would have been a fucking mess. Mm-hmm. You go with a paid off for sure.
No, Juke, good by the way too. That was a cool casting decision. Having like,
yeah, he was good. He was actually good. Yeah,
I liked on the playbill that they were like passing out to invite them to the not screening the performance of Hamnet, that it did say Noah Jupe on the playbill, which
did it really?
Yeah, it did. And I thought his moment was really. I mean, he crushed that when the hand first comes out from Jesse Buckley, and he kind of has that moment of realization that, oh, what I'm doing, you know, is affecting people. His reaction there, I think he kind of nailed it. How do you feel about Noah Jupe, Kirk?
Oh,
is the bloodline cursed?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Were kids that pudgy back then? I don't think so. There's no food.
He was rich, right?
That's true. He was living. I don't know. Like, you kill a kid, I'm like, I don't know. The stillborn scene, I'm like, I don't know. And then you got 1,000% Emily Watson too. She's giving you everything she's got.
She's so good.
As the mother. Mm-hmm. She's always good. I will say that.
So good. Man, what happened to that Dune show on HBO? That was a stinker.
Season 2. Right. I forgot about
season,
that.
They have a second,
like,
season
almost
coming.
Like when you take out that acclaimed director and creator, it's not very good anymore.
Dude, and like the only person they brought in, it was this showrunner who had only done like 4 failed sci-fi series before, like that had been canceled within like a season or two. Like, what are you doing? Just falling off.
If you ever see someone who says, I don't know why they would say this, if you ever have some like contrarian argue with you that Denis Villeneuve's not great, give them Sicario 2 and the Dune series on HBO. All right. Dude. I mean, let me know what you think now.
Sicario 2, by the way, has hitters. They got shooters. People love Sicario. Not a lot of people, but people like, do love that. It's weird.
Once again, you take out Denis Villeneuve and Roger Deakins, it's not quite as good. Yeah.
Speaking of Denis, which movie used the Max Richter score better? Arrival or this one?
Tough call.
Last of Us. Last of Us, I think it was actually very well done. That was a good scene. Where they both die or whatever.
So that's Hamnet. Varying levels here. I think some of us think it's, you know, view it in kind of this Oscar contender top of the year, which a lot of people do. That is the, that's what I saw when I went before I saw it. I saw a lot of 4.5, 5 stars on Letterboxd. But then some of us don't quite. I think it comes down to the emotion. If you connect emotionally with it, you'll probably love it. If you don't, it's probably at best like an average movie. And it could be even worse, depending on how you view it. So that's Hamnet.
Fellas, you already know what time it is. It's time to level up. And Blue Chew just dropped something crazy. I'm talking next level championship belt gold-plated energy. Blue Chew Gold is the newest innovation from the number one chewable ED brand. This ain't your grandpa's little blue pill. This is the 4-in-1 beast that's setting the gold standard for performance. We're talking two ingredients for blood flow to keep that rocket pumping, mixed with apomorphine and oxytocin to turn up the arousal and connection in your brain and body. Blue Chew Gold dissolves under your tongue and works in as little as 15 minutes. That means you can get it on quicker and stay in the game longer. Elevation without hesitation. This is peak passion and peak performance in a single tablet. If your bed could talk after this, it'd be asking for a break. Make life easier by getting harder and discover your options at BlueChew.com. And we got a special deal for our listeners. Get 10% off your first month of Blue Chew Gold with code BIGSCREEN. That's promo code BIGSCREEN. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast.
Speaking of, we just mentioned Dune, things scored by Hans Zimmer. We won't stick too long on this one because not all fives have seen it, but Ella McKay, scored by Hans Zimmer, directed by James L. Brooks. His first movie in 15 years, I believe.
Yeah, since How Do You Know? Second movie? Yep. Third movie of the century, Spanglish, yeah.
Spanglish, As Good As It Gets, Broadcast News, the legendary movie, Terms of Endearment, legendary. Emma Mackey in the lead role as Ella McKay. This is one of my pet peeves that doesn't matter, but I'm going to say it, is when the person playing the lead character's name is too similar to the actual name of the character.
Just call her Emma Mackey, like, for sure. Like,
I keep calling this movie Emma Mackey. Yeah. I'm like, that's not her fucking... It's Ella McKay. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Understated.
Oscar winner.
You will not find a podcast... with bigger Jamie Lee Curtis hate than this one.
I hate it. It's like, and this is Trading Places, Halloween, True Lies. I want to love her.
I wanted to note it earlier, but I didn't want to get into it. I didn't want to start talking about Ella McKay in the first movie. I actually like Jamie Lee Curtis a lot in the first Knives Out movie, and that's me, my one, like, I'm going to give you one. There, I'm going to give you one before now I say how fucking annoying you are.
I totally agree, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just that.
But then that Oscar win really... took a lot. It made me a humongous hater. Not her fault.
Here's my take on, before we get into my one, Jamie, I find it very interesting that Christopher Guest has never cast her in one of his films. He's been married to her the whole time.
Wow.
I don't know what that's about. I just find that interesting.
Activia commercials are great, though. Love that yogurt.
That's true.
Jack Loudon, which as a diehard Slow Horses fan, woof. Oh, this was a tough one. Kumail Nanjiani in a weird role.
Ayo Adebayo
Barry is on the screen for 15 seconds. the
my favorite performance of the year, I think, so far.
I'm gonna quote Kirk on this one because we talked about this movie after we both saw this about the same time. The corpse of Julie Kavner.
I mean, I hate to be mean. It's not nice, but whenever I see these things on Twitter every like 2 or 3 months where they say how old Marge Simpson is now, and you see, I'm sure they made her up to look older, obviously, but I was like, holy shit.
Rebecca Hall is in this movie, which is for 5 minutes.
Yep.
Albert Brooks, actually quite nice in this movie, I will say.
The best part of the movie by far.
A million miles.
And then one of the wildest, why are you in this movie, Woody Harrelson. It made $2,200,000 in 2,500 theaters over the weekend. Terms of Endearment made, I think, $3 million in 260 theaters back in 1984.
Yeah.
22%, 53% of Rotten Tomatoes split. Just terrible. 2.6 Letterboxd, 37 Metacritic. This was like
this is spectacular.
It gave me major, for good reason, Megalopolis vibes in terms of old director doing something late in career. We were like,
who doesn't like hearing that?
This I got to get to the theater.
Oh.
Seriously,
Well, Mike Figgis is making Ella Doc. He was there the whole time, so
I'm looking forward. It is also
it should be good.
Yeah. It's narrated by Julie Kavner's character,
which they just
give your score, your thoughts.
Which they just start with Julie Kavner's face at the beginning. You see it, she's like, "Hi, I'm the narrator," and then, you don't see her face narrating the movie again. Like they just like they're like, "Fuck it," like it's just. Look, James L. Brooks for me is a giant. Like broadcast news is perfection. The guy created Mary Tyler Moore. He created Taxi. Like this is, you know, as good as it gets. Terms of Dear, it's a great film. This was just a guy who I think just needed somebody to step in and say, like, look, but you got to put this down. Like this isn't working. To go through the problems with this film, I don't even know where to start. I think Clemmer, we were talking about it too. Like so. Ella McKay has a husband who, like, at the beginning, like, she's like, he's the one guy who, like, really believes in me. He's kind of a sweet guy.
We're going to spoil this.
Yeah.
No one's seen it. Three people have seen it. They're on this podcast. So just I'm letting, for the one person listening to me, like, all right, go ahead.
Yeah. Tweet away at me. It's my fault. I'm spoiling. Like, then he's very nice to Jamie Lee Curtis, but before they get married, they have a nice speech. And all of a sudden, he's a fucking idiotic monster, like for
evil. He's evil. He goes from zero to evil, and like,
but also like stupid and like dumb. Woody Harrelson is playing like maybe the dumbest character in the history, and the payoff at the end is unbelievable. Jamie Lee Curtis is going full like sitcom overacting. Julie Kavner is in full sitcom. This felt like a 1990s failed NBC pilot one off with like, you know. Mm-hmm. Julia Duffy starring as Ella. I don't even know what I was watching when I was watching.
You didn't even mention the worst character.
Which one's the worst character?
The brother is the weirdest.
So, Clemmer, I was going to say.
I've seen all year.
So, I think James L. Brooks said, you know what? I wrote like a agoraphobic sort of like rich guy in As Good As It Gets who kind of goes after a girl he shouldn't get. Let's just do it again. Let's roll it back again 27 years later with some weird brother who is like, I don't know why he is the way he is. I know they've had trauma in their life, but I don't. But they also need to treat the trauma like a punchline. Like, Rebecca Hall dies. She plays the mom, Ella McKay's mom. At the funeral, Jamie Lee Curtis and Ella McKay are watching women come in, and Woody Harrelson's hugging them, and they're like, do you think that they messed around? And they're like, no. The woman grabs his ass at the mom's wake, and they're like, whoa! It's all like, everything is just a sitcom. I don't even know what score to give it. You know, I'll give it. I'll give it a 38. I'll match Hamden.
What?
Yeah. Because you know why? I'm gonna watch this movie 20 times. I think. I'm definitely watching this movie again. I'll never watch Hamden again. But it's obviously much worse. But yet, there are like two or three moments where you're back in James L. Brooks' world. It's weird, like where you're like, oh, okay. Like Albert Brooks is terrific. Him and her, they're like great. Like I would watch that movie. Like, I don't, by the way, I don't know how the fuck she's a lieutenant governor. She's 34 years
old. Crazy leap.
And they're also, I don't spend too much time in this movie, but they're also like, boy, she's like really unelected. So she's very pleasant. She's very pretty. She's very winning, very charming. Like, why would people think she wouldn't be elected? I don't really understand. Like, that part, I don't even know what to say.
Whoever's all of her coworkers hate her.
They all. Why?
Every single coworker she's around hates her.
Except for Julie Kavner. Yeah.
It's very distractingly generic as well. It takes place in 2008. The governor is going to transition to work for the Obama administration. So it takes place in 2008. I think it only takes place in 2008 so they can use answering machines. And I'm like 90% sure it's the only reason why.
Julie Kavner's like,
no real reason.
Well, she's like, Jeff. She's like, we're in 2008. We're like, you know, people didn't hate each other. I'm like, people definitely fucking hated each other at the end of the Bush administration, whichever side you're on. Like, people hated each other then. Like this was not a wonderful.
Especially in 2008. It was an election year. People were at each other's throats.
We're just in Iraq for like five. It's not Norman Rockwell time. Brooks has lost his mind. But go ahead.
So someone commented in my Letterboxd review who worked on the movie and said that he's like, I worked on the movie and I agree with everything you said. Like don't get why, what, how, what
really?
Is this? And I asked, I said, was this movie supposed to be so generic in terms of where it's set? It's not set in any place. It's very firmly filmed in Rhode Island, not set. Like the state trooper badges, they scrub out
why,
the license plates, everything. I don't know why. And I'm not saying like like it didn't take off really points for me, but it did distract. I'm like, why is this so fucking generic? Like, why is this? It refuses to say or do literally anything, and it's just so bizarre. It's such a like. There's plot and story threads that just lead to nothing. They just kind of go away.
Woody Harrelson like, character is insane. Like, there's no reason for him to be in the movie. None. Like, there's nothing.
Craziest character in the movie. The Ayo Edebiri character is crazier. Crazy. Why would he agree to date this guy?
It's like,
this
okay.
guy is a maniac.
He's nuts.
It makes it's, zero. It's, it was, the, I guess.
It's crazy. It's like a, it's if you, first off, if this was directed by Mike Brooks, some nobody, I probably wouldn't recommend it. But like, if you're a movie person and you've seen Broadcast News, you've seen Terms of Endearment, you've like all these, and you're like, hey, this is worth a watch just because it's fascinating. Okay. In the same way that Megalopolis was fascinating, where you're like, what the, this living legend made this movie very late in his career. And this is to the point. And I think you may have said this a couple weeks ago, Kirk, as well. Like, this kind of lends credit to the Tarantino, I should hang up the cleats before I get too old thing, where it's like, all right, I kind of get that.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to make movies, but like, I kind of get
Eastwood, but then Eastwood makes Jordan number two. He's 94.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So,
Scorsese just made a movie in his 80s.
Right.
Kills Five movies, fantastic.
Yeah. The other thing is, I don't think there's a moment in the movie where she does that thing with her shoe.
No.
I don't think that's not in the movie.
No way. No way.
I was like, what?
That is the only thing that has gotten any kind of buzz for this movie, too.
Yeah,
for sure. Is that fucking poster.
Yeah, definitely.
This was a tough.
What's that, Clemmer?
Is the issue that he wrote the movie? Like, where Scorsese and Clint Eastwood are directing it, aren't writing it as much. Like, he's the sole writing credit, I believe, on this movie. Like,
I think he's just. It just felt like a. He's a sitcom guy.
It feels like someone who was in the late stages.
Like, Taxi is one of the greatest sitcoms ever.
Definitely, scene where the husband and Julie Gavner yell at each other, where it's like it's maybe the most uncomfortable I've ever been. Like, watching The Stillborn and Hamnet was like less troubling than this. You know, talk about Jeff, where she's like, he's like, what? Whatever. What do they say to each other? There's some scene
when she's running after him.
No, where the husband and Julie Gavner are in the office.
He's yelling at her. He's like, just let her know I'm looking for her. And she's like, okay, I will. Yes. It's like, oh.
That was the payoff at the end with Jamie Lee Curtis, like, framing the. I'm like, what is this? Like, what?
So yeah, what? And like, the Jack Loudon character is like this sweet guy who's obsessed with her, and then he just becomes this demon, this monster.
Yeah, I kind of want them to be together. I don't know. And they're
crazy.
You know,
crazy movie.
Unbelievable. Great.
It's by the time you hear this review a day after he posted, it's probably not gonna be in theaters anymore. But when it hits, you know, watch if you love movies and you like directing legends, it's worth it just because it's an easy watch. It's so baffling. It's just like, you're like, what the living fuck is any of this?
Completely out of character swing.
Is it like, almost like Paul Schrader syndrome? You know, like, I feel like Paul Schrader kind of went through that same sort of thing where, like, he just keeps trying to make, like, a random swing. And, like, he'll hit a first Reformed, but, like...
Yeah, but that's a good example, though, Gooch, of somebody, Kenjack, who's somebody who at least writes and directs those, though, you know?
True.
Like, he's sort of... Yeah, you're right, though, but
it does feel like, at points, James L. Brooks wrote a script. He had some threads that he wanted to tie up, and then, like, the pages got lost, or, like, he lost his place writing, and he's like, oh, did I write... He's like, ah, whatever, fuck it, and he just moved on. Like, that's literally how some of the storylines...
Jamie Lee Curtis should be arrested for this performance. Like, should just be the Oscar should be taken away.
My last thing on this movie, there is a point at the end where a concession has to be made and someone else is going to be governor, and as they're making that moment happen, Julie Kavner's character comes on the narration and goes, well, look at this. And I sat up in my seat because I thought they were about to make her governor.
That would have been a great ending.
Made governor. I would have applauded. It would have been unreal. What a fucking movie. Holy shit.
One last thing on it. We were in the group chat. I was like, oh, it's probably the last time, probably the first time you've ever gone to see a movie that the director won Best Director 41 years ago.
It's one last year.
Justin found Woody Allen with Rifkin's Festival. Jeff brought up Megalopolis, and Jeff brought up Mike Nichols too. I'm like, this has happened a lot more than you think, or than I think. I guess it's like 41 years is a long time, and it's crazy how some of these guys just keep working forever.
Yeah,
Christ. Ellen McKay. 33 out of 100 for me. It's fucking terrible movie.
19 out of 100 for me.
Oh,
33 out of 100, Jeff?
38.
I mean, once you have to remember what's below the 30s for me. Fucking Fart Brothers 5 on Tubi. I mean, come on.
By Melissa McCarthy? I watched that one.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after, the Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together, and of course, their denim, because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Time for some news, some trailers, and some things that we've been watching. The Golden Globes released their nomination. We're going to run through them very quickly. Because the Globes is a joke.
It's the Emmys of movie awards.
Yeah, it doesn't. Nothing tells me the Globes is a joke more than the fact that they nominate six people.
I know. Why are they fucking?
That's
do
like,
that?
Like, what? It's like, they're like, we just want one more person to come hang out with us that night. So, best motion picture drama: Frankenstein, Hamnet, It Was Just an Accident, Sentimental Value, Sinners, The Secret Agent. Nothing insane there. The Secret Agent out of that group is the one that's probably fighting for a Oscar nom, and chances are increasing a bit. Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. This was a surprising one. Begonia, Marty Supreme, No Other Choice, One Battle After Another. Wicked nor Avatar in the beginning nomination, which is Wicked, not getting one. It's crazy because it's musical or comedy. I was shocked, stunned Avatar didn't get one either, because it also got Avatar got nominated for Best Box Office Achievement
Award.
Hasn't come out yet. We know it's going to achieve, but it's like... Yeah.
Pre-sales. Like,
what? And then two Richard Linklater movies got nominated.
Hell yeah.
Neither... Now, so one has no chance of getting an Oscar nomination. Like, none. Like, negative chance. But Blue Moon has, like, a very shocking jaw-dropping chance. I will say it is super, super, super small. But yeah,
shame.
I think Blue Moon is picking up some serious steam. Like,
it's picking up steam. Probably more for Ethan Hawke.
It has the energy of like the classic. This is a lead performance that you can latch on to, a movie that old people are gonna love. Like, this is, I don't know. This I think it's gonna speak to the voting body more than
maybe
we realize.
I haven't seen Marty Supreme yet. It's Blue Moon's my favorite movie of the year so far.
But yeah, Nouvelle Vague, which is on Netflix, nominated as well. Those are the two shocking ones. I mean, that's just I think Blue Moon
could get the 10th spot, like in a weird, you know, I don't think it will, but like if Avatar falls
right now,
out,
so
if Wicked doesn't land, like it needs that kind of stuff.
So right now, much to the delight, well, I guess actually delight and not delight of Gooch, right now, Gold Derby actually has Avatar and Wicked off of its...
Or does it have F1? That's become interesting.
F1 is climbing a little bit. I'm now moving my camp into F1 is going to get the nomination and not Wicked, I guess, or Avatar. Because now also you have Secret Agent, No Other Choice making a bit of a, it's the international movies which are making the big push. But the F1 thing, I'm buying into it. And also, credit to them, they released F1 on streaming at the perfect fucking time. Their strategy on this was... I don't want to sit here and bootlick Tim Cook too much, but I do give Apple credit. The fact that F1 just hit streaming is like, okay, like,
can the movie with the stupidest fucking bad guy in history be nominated for Best Picture, though? That's the only thing I'd say about F1. I have a good time, but.
You want to talk about a parody character?
I enjoyed the performance, too, but, you know, I don't know.
So those are the nominations. It was so Gold Derby, which is usually pretty accurate, and it was like the first time ever that a movie not even listed was nominated for a picture award at the Globes on Gold Derby, and that was Nouvelle Vague. Movies that had a better chance, it was like the movies that had a better chance were crazy, like Thunderbolts. Like, it was like this crazy list of movies, like no one ever thought it'd get nominated, but it did. It kind of makes sense, though. It's like a French movie, though it really isn't. It's made by like one of the most American directors there is. But so that was a crazy one. And then we'll do the acting ones.
Last year, I'm Still Here got nominated when no one kind of expected it to be. So keep an eye on those. Like you said, Jeff, like those foreign films. Like something might sneak in.
Yeah, they're still trying to figure out. It's almost like in politics where they over-index or under. They're still trying to figure out that foreign part of the vote. It's still kind of semi-new. So things will overperform, I think, for a
it's
while.
Not that, it's not a foreign movie. What was that fucking swimming movie with Annette Bening?
Oh Nyad. Come on.
Oh, baby, Nyad. What are you, oh, yeah. What a great pretending you don't know Nyad.
What a great greats.
The posters.
We did
just off screen.
We did a gambling show on that, and we did. Remember, we said that Nyad winning, her winning for best actress would have been the greatest moment in Oscar history. If
unbelievable.
God. Best performance by a female actor in a motion picture drama. Eva Victor from Sorry Baby. Jennifer Lawrence, Die My Love. Jesse Buckley, Hamnet. Julia Roberts, After the Hunt. Oh, wow.
Oh.
I love those songs.
Renee Rhines, Sentimental Value. And Tessa Thompson and Hedda.
Yeah.
I'm seeing some very buzz random for that. Grouping. I'm seeing a little buzz for Tessa Thompson, a little bit.
I saw Hedda. She's very good in Hedda. The movie's not very good, but she is very good in it. Best performance by a male actor in a motion picture drama, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, The Smashing Machine, Jeremy Allen White for Springsteen, Joel Edgerton, Train Dreams, which Train Dreams is picking up a lot of steam, which I think is awesome. Yeah. I think Train Dreams is fantastic.
Very good.
Michael B. Jordan, Sinners, Oscar Isaac Frankenstein, Wagner Moura, The Secret Agent. Best performance by a female actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy, Amanda Seyfried, The Testament of Anne Lee. Chase Infinity, One Battle After Another, Cynthia Erivo, Wicked for Good, Emma Stone, Begonia, Kate Hudson, Song Sung Blue, Rose Byrne, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. Chase Infinity is picking up a lot of steam for the Oscars, which is still someone I still think she's going to get nominated because I think that movie has too much.
Yeah, should get nominated. I'm going to tell you another thing. I think I'm going to like Song Sung Blue. I just feel like I'm going to like when I see that trailer, it's
crazy.
I know, but it's hit me in the right spot. I can't help it.
I'm excited for that one.
It's got me hooked in, I think. It's probably going to be terrible.
Best performance by a male actor in motion picture, musical, or comedy, Ethan Hawke, Blue Moon, George Clooney, Jay Kelly, Jesse Plemons, Begonia, Lee Byung-hun, I believe I'm saying that right, and No Other Choice, which I finally saw No Other Choice. Fucking awesome. No Other Choice, we'll talk about it more in a few weeks. No Other Choice is one of the most innovative in terms of filmmaking and how it was shot. I'm going to watch it. I want to watch it again on mute and just watch how it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I've never seen a movie shot like that. It's like he woke up and was like, wow, I've just found 100 new ways to shoot a movie. It's fucking fascinating. Leo for One Battle After Another and Timothée Chalamet for Marty Supreme. And then supporting, Amy Madigan, Weapons, Ariana Grande, Wicked for Good, Elle Fanning, Sentimental Value, Emily Blunt, The Smashing Machine, Inga Ip's Daughter, Lilius, Sentimental Value, and Tiana Taylor for One Battle After Another. And then the men, Adam Sandler, Jake Kelly, Benicio Del Toro, One Battle, Jacob Elordi, Frankenstein, Paul Mescal, Hamnet, Sean Penn, One Battle, Stellan Skarsgård, Sentimental Value. We'll throw out director. I can't find it. When I find it, we'll read it. Those are anything. I mean, whatever. It's the fucking Golden Globes.
I always think the supporting ones are interesting because at least it's just one concentrated category. It's not both combined, so you have some idea. But again, they nominate six, so I don't really like Emily Blunt's not getting an Oscar nomination.
Emily Blunt is like that is going to be the five for supporting actress. Like that's pretty much how it is, minus Emily Blunt for Oscars. So that's nothing, right? That's nothing too crazy. And then for male supporting actor, it's a little hairy because there's some Elordi's going to get pushed heavy, Mescal, Benicio's getting a ton of love, though it does seem like I think Sandler's going to get cut out, unfortunately, which is a bummer because I don't think he is like as good as the best in that category. I still think he's
very good in that nomination. Yeah.
You don't think he's getting a nomination, Jeff?
Who?
Sandler?
I think he's going to get cut out of this.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I think the Elordi train is too heavy. I think Benicio, which by the way, Benicio deserves.
He's definitely getting nominated. So he might win, by the way. Like that's
he's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Mescal, I think is. I just think Mescal's going to nominate because Hamnet's got too much force. And right, I think Mescal supporting is a little crazy. And then Sean Penn and Stellan Skarsgård are the favorites to win. So I think Sandler's going to cut out.
Wow.
Which Sandler should have been nominated a couple years ago for fucking. Correct. I mean, whatever. But that's just. Still crazy. The one for me, which is crazy, by the way, we'll talk. I don't want to get to Oscars every week, but I have to bring this up because I know Kirk, you're the last to see it. You'll see it next week or in 2 weeks. I think it's insane that for Best Director, Josh Safdie has almost like no chance at this point. Like the director noms are like almost locked at this point, and like he's not even like a consideration. Like I think it's kind of insane, and I understand that like pictures are gonna get pushed harder and. the marketing push and the Oscar campaign for Timothée Chalamet is like an all-timer. So it's overshadowing Safdie a bit, but it is just kind of crazy to me. He's just completely not part of the conversation.
They're campaigning for him so too. Like he's out here doing so many engagements, like speaking engagements with Academy members, doing these screenings along with, I mean, they have everyone from the, like they have the casting director at these things. They have everyone. They're campaigning across the board. So it's shocking. And he's great in the room. Like when he talks about movies, he is so eloquent and it's so relatable. I don't know how he's getting left off. I mean, like you said, Jeff, everywhere.
Yeah, he should be getting more love. Some trailer stuff. Anyone have any thoughts on the Supergirl trailer? Supergirl, the next movie in the James Gunn DC universe.
Worrisome.
Not great.
Yeah. People were
not great.
People were really mad about this. I don't know what else I expected out of a Supergirl movie. Like, I feel like this is pretty much exactly what I expected it to be, look like, sound like, feel like. I feel like that's par for the course.
How about actors you've heard of? How about a song that's more recent than before I was born in the trailer? I don't know.
That's not my
complaint. That's like everything he does. That's his entire vibe. Then every movie he's ever made.
Yeah, that's James Gunn.
That's
not Gunn. Like, Colin like Gillespie.
Modern Supergirl's not supposed to be like
Hard drugs. Sorry, Craig Gillespie. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Craig.
Modern like person, like this young girl that's like kind of a more exciting, like new generation of superhero. And we got Blondie coming in. Like what?
She's not human and doesn't live on Earth.
Okay. And how? All right.
Clumber likes that hip new music, you know?
I don't. But
we don't need Chapel Roan. She's a Kryptonian teen that lives
this
in
movie,
the.
This movie.
Who's doing the Wuthering Heights one? There's a Charlie. I don't know. I'm old. Charlie XQT. Oh,
Charlie
XQT. That's what Clumber awesome. Wants. He wants that.
No, that's not what I want. But it's also not supposed to be 100% for me. I'm going to go no matter what. I love DC. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
This movie had no. Jason Momoa, I guess you could say for a quick second, there's no one you've ever seen before.
So it's kind of lifeless to me. I just didn't connect. Yeah, I don't know.
I thought this trailer stunk.
I think it visually looked worried. Like I think visually it's very dirty and gray and flat. And I'm also Gillespie and Gunn have a lot of similarities in their direction, but I felt Gunn poking through, and this is just a trailer, so it's really hard to like extrapolate. You know, anything definitive, but I felt Gunn pretty heavily in that trailer, which worries me because the thing that has excited me most about his DCU is that he has seemingly been able to convince directors to join like Luca Guadagnino. I know that fell through, but Mike Flanagan on the basis of you're going to be able to make your movie and these movies will feel like yours, which has been a problem with Marvel for 15 years now. So this feeling like a James Gunn movie, that worries me. I do not need another universe where all the movies feel exactly the same. This is only the second movie in, but
they're definitely stylistically similar. I do think the big plus here is like Gillespie, he did like, I would say he's very good at directing women centric movies. If you look at his filmography, obviously, right? Like I, Tonya is incredible. Amazing movie. And Cruella was probably the best live action Disney movie that they've ever made. Like I'd argue. So I think that is the big difference for me. And I would say, yeah, sure, visually it's going to be whatever. It's a fucking superhero slop. Like, it's just what we're, I don't know if I'm expecting my thing to be like revolutionary from that angle. I just feel like this is pretty much exactly what I expected. I didn't think this was going to be some wheel reinvention or whatever.
What casual fan is going to want to see this? Like, what? Why?
Well, it's
why
called Supergirl. I mean, people are going to go see it. It's just.
Someone who's not super in love with comics, there's no. No one I recognize if I'm a casual fan. Like, there's no celebrities in this. It looks drab. It's got this old song playing. Like, if I'm a regular person, I'm like, why would I go see this?
I mean, you got to hop off this being an old song. That song is still wildly popular.
Yeah, it's like
Blondie's awesome. I just don't. There's nothing different about this.
Miley Cyrus did a cover of it like 8 years ago.
Then use that one. Then use that cover.
Clemmer, that's got nothing to do with the fucking movie or not. Is if Blondie's is playing the beginning?
It feels old. It's got nothing to do with anything.
That's stupid.
It doesn't. It feels so threadband. It feels like something we've seen.
That song sounds like that song could come out today.
No,
like that's a bad example. Like it's not like
a good example of the problems with this. It's just
one Hank Williams song.
Immigrant Song was like the big thing for Thor Ragnarok, and that was like one of their most successful movies. It was fucking.
This has to feel. I think it has to feel different.
Okay, if Blondie's in the trailer, and it looked better, you wouldn't care that Blondie was.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't care as much. Also, if it had people I'd recognize, this felt cheap.
Did you not watch what is the Game of Thrones? House of the Dragon show.
Yeah. Did she you watch was that very Climber? Popular off that.
I did not.
Okay, she was. I mean, that's one of the biggest shows on television, and she was like the clear star on the first six episodes.
Like, she's not yet. She's not one star.
No, but TV is old.
That doesn't even.
But like, who are you going to get for this? McKenna Grace? Like, that's like. But there's no
point. I don't care about Supergirl.
But your point, Clemmer, is your point is like Christopher Reeve was unknown, and they surrounded him with Brando, Hackman. Correct. Yeah, that I get. Glenn Ford, all these people. But yeah, that's not.
It's not the title character. It's everyone else around her.
I get what they're trying to do here, but I also like they're very clearly trying to make sure Superman is the face of the DCU, and there's two ways to do it. You either do this or you do back-to-back Superman movies like they did with Iron Man back in the day, though I will put an asterisk on that. A lot of the MCU success was mildly accidental. Like, obviously, like they're, you know, when they released Iron Man 2, that wasn't like, hey, we know that this is going to make Iron Man the biggest fucking thing in the world. But that's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to make sure they hammer home that Superman is like this relatable, fun, different thing. And they're using, you know, a Superman, you know, kind of side character for that sense. So I get it. But man, if it doesn't land, they are kind of trending in the wrong direction. So I didn't love the trailer either, but that's a whole different story. So that's Supergirl. That comes out next year. Comes out in June. It's a ways away. The Drama is the other trailer we're going to talk about here from A24. This is starring Zendaya and Robert Pattinson. Days before their wedding, a couple's relationship is shaken when one partner discovers unsettling truths about the other. Interesting marketing campaign for this, too, the way that this was released. What do we think about the trailer for The Drama?
Kind of like the trailer until I found out the twist is because of some spoilers on Twitter. I'll tell you what. That'll be interesting. That'll be very interesting once it plays out.
I don't know the twist, so the trailer I thought was really interesting.
It was a good trailer.
Much away, and I liked it, but I don't know the twist.
Yeah, I saw that, unfortunately.
Yeah, the twist is the twist is something else. I would say it's not having it spoiled, but if you do, it is. It may up your intrigue of the movie being like, what the fuck?
That's true. I'm definitely in now.
Yeah. Warner Brothers, not too much to say much more about this at this point. I think they're kind of going through the motions. Paramount making a stronger push since we last talked about it. Hollywood, a lot of arms and unions in Hollywood voicing concern. And the government is very clearly signaling that these are going to have a hard time getting through the hopper. Bob Iger raised some concerns. Not much of an update yet, but as we continue to chug along, we'll just kind of throw it in here each week. Avengers Doomsday, you want to talk about marketing? This is an interesting one. Avengers Doomsday is going to get four teaser trailers released 1 week after another, all attached to Avatar. James Cameron getting blamed for this, which is very odd to me because I didn't know James Cameron was the CEO of Disney. But this is a very clear move from Bob Iger and Disney to A, get butts in seats for Avatar, which I don't think they need. It's opening up to like 1 million screens in China, but also artificially creating hype for an Avengers movie, which I think is going to be big, but they're going to have to do some legwork to get people even close to as hyped as they were for the last one. I think this is this annoying? It is, but if we're looking at it in the vacuum of marketing, I think it's a great move by them. You get four different trailers for four consecutive weeks. They did that stupid empty chair thing a couple months ago. Guess what? It did a zillion views, and it did cause it garnered some artificial hype. And I think they're seeing it again. They're like, how do we do it? This is one way to do it. So four different trailers. They air. I think they're exclusively in theaters too. My guess is that when the first trailer drops out of theaters, that'll go publicly. Online, but they're also going to leak, which I think they like when that shit happens. Like, I don't think he'd ever admit it, but I think Christopher Nolan likes when the prologue is like a grainy fucking prologue. That's how I fucking saw the Odyssey prologue. Like, there's this like kind of guerrilla marketing, like kind of different type of hype to it. So I think it's annoying, but I kind of tip my cap to them. That's an interesting release strategy for trailers. I don't know if people agree on that.
I fucking hate every single thing about this movie so far. Everything that they've done to promote it so far, between the chairs, bringing back every single Bryan Singer fucking X-Man. Everything about this is desperate. I'm excited about Clayface next year. I'm excited about Spider-Man Brand New Day. But Doomsday is like, good Lord, what the fuck? It feels like they're exacerbating every single problem they have right now with this movie. I don't know. And like just like the reports of these actors talking about like Kelsey Grammer's like, I didn't shoot with anybody. Like, I don't know. These updates have given me zero confidence in this being able to get them back on track.
And I think I'm kind of with you right now where I'm just like, this is almost feels like reeks of like this sort of desperation for Marvel at this point where I'm like, I don't love kind of trying to go back to play the hits, if that makes sense. But at the same time,
well, and they have to play the hits even stronger in the next one too. Like the assumption is that the Secret Wars is like 10x in terms of what they have in there. The one thing that we did talk about though, which I do like, is that they did use like predominantly real sets, which I'm like, oh, that's an interesting thing to like curry some good favor. I my confidence level is low, but I'm still excited about it. I won't even pretend to not be excited. But my excitement level cannot be as high as Gucci's excitement level because on New Year's Eve, folks, a new tradition is starting in theaters across the country. Francis Ford Coppola is re-releasing one of the biggest steaming pile of shit movies released in recent memory, Megalopolis. Are you still a 4-star Megalopolis guy?
I might take it to 5 stars. I don't know. It's a work of art. It's a iconic. It's spits in the face of traditional filmmaking to create something new. It's bold. It's courageous. I wish I could go. I'm going to be busy that night, but one night engagement across like 7 cities. I hope it's sold out at every single one. I know you want to go, Jeff. I know you want to be the audience member that gets up.
No better night to release it than the night where every theater across the country is sold out for Stranger Things. Stranger Things, which is going to make, if you didn't get tickets in the first 20 minutes, you weren't getting tickets. And then so you're going to have this one sad Megalopolis screen. You know, there's going to be a dad taking his kids to go see Stranger Things on New Year's Eve. And they're like, sold out? What's available? Well, my friend. WoW Platinum in Megalopolis.
I like it. Coppola's just, he's just got his arms around it. He's embracing it the whole way. He's like, let's just fucking do it.
He did say, he's like, I hope this starts a brand new tradition of New Year's Eve. Definitely. People seeing this movie on New Year's Eve.
No question.
They should release it with the Figgis documentary, though. He's been ringing the bell for that documentary, which I think is pretty awesome because it definitely doesn't show him in the best light.
Who mentioned here? My favorite part of the documentary is still Adam Driver not showing up to do all those stupid games.
Yeah, he's like, I am not doing this bullshit. Yeah. I'm not playing patty cake with freaking John Voight.
Kirk, anything you've watched in the last week that we haven't mentioned that you want to throw out there?
I'm trying to think if I've seen anything. Nothing crazy, I don't think. I feel like I'm forgetting something. I finally saw. Go ahead. If I remember, I'll let you know. Go ahead.
What about you, Ken Jack? You watched that. I know you said you rewatched a ton of stuff on the flight, but anything during your honeymoon?
Just a million movies on the plane, but there was one that I rewatched that made me so mad we didn't get a million more of these movies, and I haven't seen it on, I think, a plane ever, which is Master and Commander. I love Master and Commander.
Oh, great. It was great.
It's an exceptional movie, in my opinion. I'm pissed they didn't make, while they were still around that age, like a ton of these. Like, they were so, because it's based off a book series, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it did pretty well, too.
Yeah, it made, I was just looking at it, 211 off 150, which, like, obviously not the greatest, but, like, it was,
Yeah, he was a big star then.
Yeah, and that was a good movie. I really, really liked those movies. Director. And, like, the action, the way they set up the action between the boats, like, oh, it's so good. Great climax. Loved that. I did buy, I don't know if we're at the showing off release or stuff we bought.
No, go ahead.
From some, like, hole in the wall in Kyoto, I got Japanese Independence Day version, which it's cool. Japanese Mission Impossible. And then they have this magazine there called Flicks, which I got. Look at this, looks like brand new, right? Like, essentially, like the magazine quality. Like, this is from 2001. And it's basically just recapping all of the year for 2001, where like they go through and do like, hey, this is what this person was doing in this year, like Buscemi, Gandolfini, like all the years. And it's like recapping for them, like what they were doing throughout and what they're nominated for and all stuff. It's really cool. It's an awesome magazine.
Huh.
So I did that, and went to Toho Cinemas too, which they have like a giant Godzilla hanging over like the entire building, which is also is very interesting.
Oh, that's pretty fucking cool. Gooch, what about you? Anything you've seen?
No, just been doing a lot of rewatches. Also got to see No Other Choice in theaters once again in IMAX. There's a scene, and Jeff, I don't want to spoil it, but there is a scene in the movie that I think is like right there with anything from Marty Supreme, anything from One Battle After Another. There's a scene that is just simply like, it's insane. It's a 10-minute sequence, and it is one of the best scenes of the year, maybe the decade. Like, it's crazy how good it is. And he shoots technology. Like, I think every single working director right now needs to go see this movie, mm-hmm. take notes, learn how to shoot an iPhone, learn how to shoot an iPad. Because what he does with technology in this movie, it's like he's cracked the code on it. I mean, really cracked the code on it. Made it look gorgeous.
Yeah, it's there's something, again, I'm excited to talk about it at length, which we will in 2 weeks. We'll talk about it with Marty Supreme. It's like, holy fucking shit. Clymer, what about you?
Yeah, I saw a movie, Fockham Hall, which is like a Downton Abbey like spoof movie. It's in theaters. Oh, yeah. And it was pretty funny. Like, it was nice to be in a movie theater and laughing with an audience. Like, there's so few comedies put out. And this, like, this didn't reinvent the wheel, but it was pretty funny. It had some funny, like, you know, just what do you expect from a spoof movie?
It's
like,
what's his face, right?
Damien Lewis, right?
Damien Lewis,
Jimmy,
yeah.
Jimmy Carr, is he the one that did it? That is the comedian?
I forget. Let me see here. Thomasin McKenzie's in it. Jim O'Hanlon directed it.
Okay.
If you know the Downton Abbey universe at all, you'll laugh. But I don't think you even need to be that familiar with it to at least find some jokes. You know, it's just a fun comedy that was pretty decent, and like, just don't get those anymore. So hopefully there'll be more comedies in theaters next year.
We actually got invited to like a Fackham Hall like premiere thing that they did where you had to dress up old timey at a giant mansion in New Canaan, Connecticut, which all I know about New Canaan is super rich, right? Like, very rich area.
Yep.
But yeah, it was like a big estate where all the people going would dress up. It was during my honeymoon, couldn't go, but it would have been interesting.
And I saw Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. Very cool to see Kill Bill in theaters again. I was very lucky that I think I was 13 when it came out. I was allowed to go see it. But I didn't appreciate it like I appreciate it now. And so actually getting to see it in theaters now was awesome. And just the way it's cut together, I mean, it's very, like, it just fucking works beautifully. We are doing our top 75 of the year, though. Top 75 of the century. It's in January, probably starting the second week of January. We're going to do this whole system now. It's like points-based, and we're trying to make it very even. It's going to be a collaboration of all of our top 50 lists. And I feel like we can't allow this one, though. You have to only do Kill Bill Volume 1 and Kill Bill Volume 2, right?
Yeah, that's my take.
I think this is like, really? that's like the original release. Like, this
I
feels
go the
like,
other way with it.
No.
Tarantino intended it to be one movie.
Yeah, but he didn't release it that way.
Harvey Weinstein wanted it to be two movies. So if you agree with this, you're a Harvey.
Well, you're a friend of his, so give him a call.
Oh, no, I think you might agree. You're siding with Harvey Weinstein.
Fighting
right
for
now.
His innocence. I don't know.
I don't know about that.
My only pushback on that would be I would hate to see both volumes get in. And then a movie get left off because of that. Like, well, I want Kill Bill taking.
I'd be curious about what people listening think.
Fun. Did you see a Clumber?
Well, The Whole Bloody Affair. Yeah. No, I didn't.
Then you can't. Then he's on your list. Then you can't.
No, I don't do re-releases. Also, don't know if it was in 1,000.
No, I'm just, no on the 75. I don't care about your dumb thing. The top 75 list. Then you can't put it on.
I've watched them back to back.
No, it doesn't. You didn't see The Whole Bloody Affair.
It's there. It's watching different. Them back to back is not even remotely close to what The Whole Bloody Affair is. It's not even.
Oh, I know. I haven't seen. I meant just one and two should be the same movie. That's all I'm saying.
By the way, on our list, I just open up this Mission Impossible Independence Day thing. Guess who was on what video or what movie's on the insert? Motherfucking Can't Escape It ever on this podcast. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
One of the greatest movies ever made. One of the greatest things ever put on screen. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Absolute. Piece of shit movie. So bad, like half the people in that movie didn't act again. Like Stuart Townsend got axed from Aragorn like the day, like what, 1 week into shooting Lord of the Rings, and he went and did this instead. Piece of shit movie. that ended up a great banger. Calling a Farrell phone booth.
Another one I saw is on Amazon Prime if you're looking for a new Christmas movie. Great cast. Not a good movie. Well, it wasn't horrible, but it's not good. Michelle Pfeiffer, Felicity Jones, Chloe Grace Moretz, Dennis Leary. Dominic Sessa, who's just in holiday movies now, I guess. He just does that.
Now you see me.
Jason Schwartzman, directed by Michael Showalter, called Oh, What Fun. Actually, like a different type of concept about a mom who kind of like bucks the trend of like Christmas movie moms, like kind of like the whole point. It was like fun in spots, but not too great. And then I think I'm just out on Pluribus, like fully.
I need to catch up.
It's just taking too long to do anything. I actually think the latest episode of Pluribus was like kind of like had this like very like grand visceral feel and like very emotional and quiet. But I think this far into the season, it just didn't work for me. I'm just not a huge.
No,
on the flip side though, it's slop, but man, that the last episode of It, Welcome to Derry, Skarsgård's fucking awesome as Pennywise. He is just so fucking good at that role that it's like, again, it's like it's Stephen King's slop, but like I'm very entertained. There's one left. So I can't complain. Like it kind of did everything that I expected it to do. So
people are loving
better that. Than, I like it more than the movies.
Also, that reminds me, another thing I did watch and I'll recommend to everyone here and listening. The Skarsgård actors on Actors.
Yeah, very good.
Alexander and Stellan. Very great, like insightful, very funny. Out of all the ones I've watched so far, that one's by far the best.
Agreed.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
All right, top 10 list. Before we go, top 10 movies that make you cry. This will be an interesting one because this is very, very, very much a personal thing. So this list will be quite funny at the end. Kirk is up first, then Clemmer, then Kenjack, then Gooch, then myself. Then it snakes backwards. We'll do some pretty good top 10 lists to end the year. We're definitely going to do, I think, we got to do Christmas movies, obviously, next week. How can you not? We'll do top 10 working directors, too, by the end of the year, probably in 2 weeks. But this one, movies that make you cry, Kirk, number one pick, the number movie that makes you cry.
Okay. I mean, look, there's some obvious ones here, but I'm going to go with a film that came out over 40 years ago. A terrific writer-director, James L. Brooks, made a movie called Terms of Endearment from the Larry McMurtry book. And there's a scene in the end where Deborah Winger says, she's dying of cancer. She says goodbye to her kids. Yeah, I'm sure you know the scene, Clemmer. They come into the hospital.
Many years ago.
Yeah, they come into the hospital and she literally saying goodbye to her kids. Like, that's it. And I cannot get through that scene. There are other more obvious ones for sure. I know they'll be listed, but I'm going to pick for my good friend James L. Brooks, Terms of Endearment. A true weeper. I mean, like, the last hour is just out of control. If you haven't seen it, it's also just a great movie, too. Like, a great, it deserved Best Picture. Jack's great in it, too. So, but yeah, that's number one for me.
It's nice to end on a strong note for James.
Yeah, I feel like he needed it. Yeah.
Clemmer, what's your number one?
I'm going to go Field of Dreams. The end. I mean, you got the dead dad stuff, which always hits for me. Playing catch one extra time with his son. Pretty great. The shots. I know it's when talking about manipulation. You got the score. You got the camera work there. It all obviously is leading to that. But man, does it hit? That payoff is incredible, and I cry every time.
Yeah, I mean, I can't hate on that at all. It's a great pick,
Amy Madigan.
Yeah, very good in that.
I'm not gonna pick it because it's way too personal for me. But as a diehard Cleveland sports fan, the Major League is like an all time. I tear up at the end of it. Oh, when he crossed the home plate. Oh, they on the Indians went at that's. But it won't be on my list. That's too like personal coded. Kenjack, you have number three.
I really thought you were about to say Draft Day and say the scene where they say, what the fuck is the name?
Draft Day does make me cry. Yeah, for different reasons.
Freddie Mac, no matter whatever the fuck the guy's name is. I don't remember. What was the name? You know the name, Jeff. What was the Bozeman's character's name?
Mac?
Vaunted? No, that's a player. That's the actor. No.
Right? Yeah. No matter what. Yeah.
But I'm going to go with Children of Men. The scene where in Children of Men, where the baby starts, they're in the middle of like the fucking, they're clearing out that building, the war scene, that big long take just ended. The baby starts crying and they start bringing like the baby down the stairs and like everyone like freezes in their place. And like that fucking score hits in, Caron's cinematography like off the fucking charts. Like everything about that scene, I miss that version of Clive Owen, by the way. Everything about that scene is so good and so goddamn like heartbreaking and wrenching and just like it really. It gets me every single time. I don't think I've watched that movie a lot. I think I've never watched that scene without crying at least a little bit. I love that movie and love that scene. Such a great scene, sequence.
Terms of Endearment, Field of Dreams, Children of Men, 3. I like the good list so far. Gooch, 4.
We've been talking a lot about Adam Sandler lately, hoping he gets a nomination. I'll tell you a movie he should have gotten a nomination for, and that's Click. Click? Fucking.
Oh, Click
that,
is, yeah.
That is a sad scene. Damn.
Fucking. I think it's the first movie I ever, like, legit cried in a movie theater. And it's still to this day when I think about it, like he loses, he just fast forwards through all of his life and loses all these moments with his family members. And that closing scene, I mean, it is geared to make you cry. And you almost, at that time, Sandler was still coming off like the 90s run and a very strong comedic run. And then you really get blindsided by this emotional story with an absurd premise. And he's in the rain and he's crying and he's realizing he's lost his whole life. And good Lord, just tore me apart. So Click is a good,
like, it's manipulative, but that's okay. Like, that's the only disappointment with Click is that it wasn't made in 2025 because it would have had Shark Tank products and it was made in 2025.
True. That
was
a good point. I didn't think of that.
But you might have like Lori Grenier and Barbara Corcoran in it. I would have loved that. Five for me is an earned, I think this is an earned cry. We'll dip in the Pixar Coco. Coco is a fucking, oh my God, that'll rip your heart out. Anything with like loss, you lost any grandparent, parent, anything. And it's like very earned too, because it really sneaks up on you, because it's there in the movie throughout. Like there is like loss, like it's inherently a part of the story of the movie. Like they're in the land of like the dead basically, but it sneaks up on you towards the end. And then when that song, which is a great song, oh, I think we saw that one together, Kendrick. That was the early days of our old podcast. That movie, oh, we got to hit you like a ton of fucking bricks. Coco's
brutal one.
Coco, very right, like rightfully so, gets a lot of praise, and it's deservedly so because Coco is one of Pixar's better efforts. Also, looks incredible too, but in terms of a cry, it's right there. Now I'm gonna land in schmaltzy Oscar bait, one of my favorite movies of all time territory. I'm gonna go La La Land. The end. Oh, that's. You won't find anyone who likes La La Land more than me. I ate it up as much as anybody. I like it more every time I see it. But I think the montage is done perfectly at the end, and it subverts expectations. I love watching La La Land with someone who hadn't seen it. We're like, what the fuck? They're like, well, this is how it ends? Tugs on your heartstrings perfectly. Again, Oscar Beatty. But I do love it. I love the end of La La Land. Chazelle, need a little bit of a. I know people love Babylon.
Yeah, we need to come back here.
Little down since La La Land hasn't really hit.
Yeah. First Man IMAX scene, still great, but maybe the rest not so great.
Love La La Land. Doing that's like number six. Prison drama next. Coco, La La Land.
Right? Is he still doing that?
That's
the prison,
right, yeah.
The prison movie? Something like that. I thought so. I'm going to go on a more sentimental note, a movie that we all watch this time of year, and that's It's a Wonderful Life. Happy note, but makes
Climber. You took Climber's pick for sure.
That was my next pick, absolutely.
It's crazy. You watch it. I watch it every year. I've seen it a million times, and again, that letter at the end gets me. No man is poor who has friend, or a man who's, the friendship line at the very end. I'm stumbling through it, but that gets me every single time. And I could say that for a lot of those, you know, Frank Capra movies. There's that sentimentality really gets to me in older movies. And it works on me. So It's a Wonderful Life.
I'm seeing it in Alamo on Christmas Eve this year. My fiance actually never seen it. It's my mom's favorite movie. We're going to go see it at the Alamo. Happy they're playing and see it on the, I've never seen it in a theater. Kenjack, number eight.
I'm kind of torn between a couple. There are a couple more schmaltzy ones for sure. I think there's one where it's built to make you cry for sure. And I would guess only maybe me, you, and Gooch have seen it. But Grave of the Fireflies is Jesus Christ, dude. That is a killer. That is an absolute killer. The entire third act is just it's crushing. The brother and sister just like all they want to do is fucking survive and hope and just I don't want to spoil anything for the movie, but man, it's just. It's one of the saddest I've ever been watching. I would say any cartoon I've ever watched, anything animated I've ever watched, nothing has made me feel as sad as that movie did. It is brutal, but a fantastic movie regardless.
Yeah, that was part of my big Studio Ghibli watch back in COVID era. Have it on the shelf behind me. Great movie. Clemmer, number nine. You had your pick stolen. So what's next?
I'm gonna go Planes.
Come on, just do it. Just rip it. Just say the one we all want you to say.
I was saying Plane, Trains, Automobiles. Is that what you wanted me to say?
No, we want to cast away.
Oh, no, that doesn't really make me cry. It's hopeful at the end,
I'm crying the last half of that movie, for sure.
Oh, no, no. You don't mean that. That's a great movie. Points of Automobile is the end when John Candy goes to Steve Martin's house and sees all, everything Steve Martin has. And it, you just, his John Candy just so great at just facial expressions. Just, you see everything on his face and how he's so happy for his friend, but realizes that he has none of this. And it's just,
what do you think he does like 2 days later? Like, do you think he stays there for the weekend? Or do you think he's like is he out of there on like that night? Does he sleep over?
I think he sleeps over and leaves in the morning.
Yeah. And they just never sees him again.
Probably not.
It's kind of depressing.
I know. It's, and he goes back to his life. Sad, yeah, being alone. Yeah.
Being
so
alone
sad.
And sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad. And he's such a good guy. Yeah. So Planes, Trains, Automobiles, is my pick.
Kirk, last pick.
I choose between two or three. So it doesn't always have to be sad, although this one is. I was thinking of another one. The other one I was thinking of was when they rescue Matt Damon in The Martian.
Yo, I had that. Yeah. I had that. Yep. Yeah. I got that too.
I cry.
That
is, that, I cry. I cry every time.
That's a great one. I don't know if I would have had my list. That gets me every time.
I'll go with it.
Like,
I'll go with it.
So joyous.
I'll go it's with on my it. List. I'll go it with gets it. Me every time.
My favorite
every time.
My favorite movie moment of the century so far is when the group gets together and they're like, you know what? We're fucking going back and getting this guy. I was like, fuck yes. One of my favorite moments ever. And it pays off. So when they get him and he's crying at the end and he's all like, that for me. My other pick was going to be Clemmer, the end of E.T. He says, I'll be right. You know, he's that's so, I mean, we're, these are two. That's, I'll go with The Martian, I guess. But E.T. was right there for me as well.
That would have been, E.T. is another great one. But The Martian is like, That is a slept on like joyous cry at the end, because that is so, you're just like, yeah, fuck,
you're
yeah.
so invested.
It's a great
with this
movie
guy.
Cheer
the
yeah.
whole time.
You're score like, too. Score yeah, is yes, pretty hard. I don't even know who did that, because that's Scott, right? But I don't know who did the score because it wasn't Zimmer.
E.T., even when E.T.'s sick and he's all gray, I cry.
Oh, definitely, definitely, sick. Definitely. Yeah,
that's a yeah. That is a good one. That is a good one. That's a good list. That's a good mixed list right there. Terms of Endearment, Field of Dreams, Children of Men, Click, Coco, La La Land, It's a Wonderful Life, Grave of the Fireflies, Planes, Trains, Automobiles, and The Martian. So yeah, we will be doing Christmas movies, directors, and then in January we will sound off. Should which Kill Bill should be included, though? Volume 1 and 2, or should it be The Whole Bloody Affair? We will be doing our top
majority
15
yeah.
movies.
Group of five of here, season. So majority wins. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
I say no. I think you have to break. You have to go down and rank one and two, because I think that's part of it.
I agree with you.
It's
but
hard because like, there's not some votes. Massive quality difference between them. So I feel like it almost kind of just makes it more filler, you know, for the list.
So you vote
know
for just one.
I kind of think it should
yeah,
be one.
Who's your one? Right?
Kind of. Yeah. It kind of makes a traffic jam.
All right.
One.
All right. We're out.
That means something gets back on my list, because spoiler for me, they were both on there, so something gets added to my list. Just fair. Go. Something else gets a little recognition. I'm excited to do this. We're gonna do 10 a week for 5 weeks. We'll do a big list. We'll blog it too. Try to you know. Yeah. I'm determined. Where when people open this list, they're not gonna read it like they do when like Variety releases theirs, where it's like,
oh, they'll bitch. People.
Like,
bitch.
Oh, that makes sense. And, oh, this was clearly a movie that you picked because you want to piss people off. Like this is gonna be this is our true opinions.
Well, I got I don't know anything, but the Clemmer makes me nervous on this list. I think anything's in play.
Oh, I'm gonna have some awesome.
Yeah, I think anything's in play.
I've seen his number one.
He's got to end up here, right?
So the big thing with our top 50, this is the movie franchise that needs to be noted is Lord of the Rings. You have two people in Kirk and Clemmer who do not give a fuck about Lord of the Rings, and you have three people who love it. So basically, how we're gonna do it is you get. Say you're number one on someone's list, you get 50 points, 249, so on and so forth. And then you get bonus points if you end up on more than one
X amount
top
of people's
50.
Lists.
So if you're on all five top 50s, you get 50 bonus. We're going to figure out the point up. We're going to make it very even where, yes, if two people have it left off, like Lord of the Rings will still get recognition on the list, but something that's on all five will obviously get a significantly larger bump.
This feels like a castaway protection list is what that feels like.
Yeah, it's called it's called castaway insurance, yeah, basically.
We need it as much as possible.
You never know.
Cover some list. You have your castaway 1 through 10.
Everyone likes Castaway. This is not a weird Chris thing. I'm a weird guy. I get it.
Essentially, it's two movies, the best two movies of every year if you average it out, though. I don't think anybody who's normal would have Castaway in their top 300 this century. I don't think.
We'll do a whole breakdown too of like what years appear the most in the list and all that. And yeah, it'll be fun. That'll be a fun way to just kick off the maybe we'll just do it the first week of January. Then we'll eventually do our most anticipated, because it's not like anything in January we're highly anticipating.
Oh, so. I don't know.
Next week's a big one: Avatar and the Housemaid.
Oh,
the Bone Temple.
Oh, that's right.
That's January.
Reviews are very interesting. Yeah.
When's the Sam Raimi? Trailer's when's crazy. The Sam Raimi one with Rachel? Is that,
that's the end of January.
I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Me too.
Me too.
Yeah.
But the slate as a whole, yeah, though, January, February.
I know, Clemmer. The box office, we know. We'll go through that whole thing. We do it every fucking month.
It's not even just box
office. Jason Statham's month, all right? Pay some respect.
It's not good.
Avatar, Fire and Ash, The Housemaid next week. We'll do Christmas movies. And then we will talk. Hopefully, we will all be able to see it one way or another, even if it's on a grainy fucking computer screen. The Odyssey prologue. Which there's also going to be huge trailers next week as well. Avengers, Odyssey, all that and more. So that's it for Kirk, Ken Jack, Gooch, Clemmer. I'm Jeff Thielo. We'll talk to you next time.
Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code Barstool for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.